and welcome to another episode of our podcast, Unlocking Your People. Today is another of our Just Ask Jess slightly shorter episodes where Roz, our amazing producer, director, and all-round wizard of things, reaches into her giant bag of scenario tricks and pulls out questions that I need to answer on the fly, just to give myself a little bit of a, is it on the fly, okay? So, like, no prep, no, just get on with it and answer the question. So, again, I will give the disclaimer I always give, which is if this scenario is like anything else that you are currently handling, get proper support and advice. Always good to talk to legal, always good to talk to HR before you press the button on anything. So, please bear that in mind before you go out and say, I watched a podcast and the woman said do this. So, yes. That's good. With that in mind, Roz, you can fire away.
Love it. You got to always have that disclaimer on these episodes, Jess, because you never know what's coming in.
I have legal on speed dial because there are lots of things that I don't know anything about or I don't know the law on, right? So don't skimp on legal. Don't skimp on accounting and don't skimp on legal.
That's a really good point. I need to keep that in mind in my own business. All right. So we'll roll into your first question for today. Are you ready? It's pretty, it's a little meaty. So yeah, it'll take a few minutes to answer, I'm sure, but it's also very intriguing. Okay, here we go. Question today. We're a small organization, but have grown quickly. We're up to 17 staff now. Okay. We really need to have something in place for giving feedback and having some kind of review conversations, but the team all have different ideas about what that should look like. And our two managers are worried about putting something in that'll be a ton of extra work. We don't have anyone in HR. What should we be doing around performance and how do we make sure we don't overload our managers? Oof, that's a big one.
So essentially we need to do feedback and performance reviews for 17 people without too much work and everybody's got a different idea about what we should do.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay. Where do I begin? So don't know what your leadership structure is. So don't know how many people you have reporting to people. General rule of thumb in organizations is you should be able to feed a team with a large pizza. So if you have too many people to feed with a large pizza reporting to you, you're going to need some help to do review process. So that's a good little nugget.
That's amazing. I've never heard that. That's great. Yeah,
my little. Now, of course, in my family, that doesn't work because my 18-year-old will eat a whole pizza himself. But in the world of work, it works just fine. So that principle. So think about that first before you start putting anything in place in case you need to make some tweaks to who does the review or feedback process. There's been a fair amount of stuff over the last probably 5 years, probably louder pre-COVID, but about the fact that performance management is dead and all this kind of jazz. It's not. What we are moving away from, which I think is a good thing, is too much bureaucracy around the process. Like the whole point of performance management is that somebody knows what they're doing well so they can keep doing it, and they know what they're doing that's not meeting expectations so they can change, and that you support them to change. So it's about the quality of the conversation, but there are some things you want to make sure you document, because if you do end up having to take action because somebody's underperformance, you need documentation to support that, right? So there are a few things to think about. Like the traditional process with performance has often been an annual thing, right? So because that's your financial year, and if you're going to give anybody kind of financial reward to tied to performance, it kind of fits with the financial year. But that doesn't necessarily mean that's what's best for people's brains or their functioning. And in smaller organizations, you may not be tying it directly to reward because you might not have the budgets or the means to do that. So I would think about them slightly separately. So the first piece is, how do we ensure that people are getting the feedback and support they need to perform and how they know how they're doing? And then the second piece is, do we do anything with it around what's the consequence of performance? So Gallup would say, like, people should get recognition once every 7 days to be high performing, right? That does not mean you need to sit down and have a performance review with everyone every 7 days, but that is the value of making sure you have some kind of touch point. Now, that can still be a good job well done, right? But I do weekly one-to-ones with my team, because then that gives space for me to have feedback conversations and talk about the things that are on their agenda. And earlier in the series, we had a conversation with Pierre Bada right back at episode one. And he said, if you're only going to do one thing, it would be the one-to-one conversation. So for me, that's a good place to start. Make sure you're having touch points with your team that allow you to give them feedback. Now, back to the pizza piece. If your team is more than 5 or 6 people, the chances are you're not going to be able to do a weekly one-to-one. So that's fine. Think about your structure, but more importantly, what is the frequency with which you can meet with people? Because it's more about them having a regularity of touch point and knowing that they have time with you, even if they, you know, aren't getting it every week or kind of having a huddle every morning or whatever it happens to be. Right. So that's the first thing, making sure you're having one-to-ones. Then at some point you need to document a more fulsome piece of that person's performance. If you're having one-to-one conversations, documenting in your own notebook is fine, right? That's enough for kind of notes on that person's performance, but it doesn't give the other person anything to go back to. So how are you tracking what their strengths are? How are you tracking where they performed well? How are you kind of keeping track on all of those things? Because one of the problems with our brains is that we have recency bias. We remember the recent period of time. And so if somebody asked you for a raise or a promotion or a change or something like that, your brain will only think about like the last chunk of time, not everything they've done for the previous year, right? And you want to be thinking about those things when you're making decisions at that kind of meaningful and meaty. So you need some kind of check-in point with people. And you need some kind of documented, how are you doing at a regular interval? What that interval looks like and how often you do that is kind of dependent on the type of business you have, how big your team is, all those types of things. I like weekly one-to-ones and I like quarterly, more substantial, how are you doing conversations. When I wasn't so much of a doing leader, when I was in a bigger organization and I had a team more than I do today, I used to do weekly one-to-ones, even though I had a bigger team because I had more capacity, wasn't doing. And I used to do monthly coaching conversations, which were like development conversations. Right now with the team that I have here, where I'm doing more in a run of a week, I still have weekly one-to-ones because that's the time we have all of those conversations, set expectations, reground, provide feedback. But it could be bi-weekly. I probably wouldn't want to go more than monthly. If you're going to go more than monthly, I'd have a look at your structure and see who could be providing more regular feedback to people other than you. It doesn't have to be the leader all the time giving the feedback. So regular one-to-ones, some touch point for the more formal, let's kind of take a pulse check on where we are and everything conversation. How are you doing? That conversation is also the place for career aspirations, like how's their general well-being, like all of those things. So once a quarter, once every 6 months, probably more or less the right cadence for those types of things. And that's usually fairly consistent. Like I don't see anybody doing anything much more dramatically different than that. Where there's more variation is what does performance kind of drive at the end of it. So depending on the type of organization, your performance could drive pay increases, it could drive bonuses, it could drive development opportunities, it could drive promotions, like all of those things. Smaller organizations tend not to link to pay just because we don't have the financial ability to do it. But that doesn't mean performance couldn't switch on, for example, a development plan for everybody, because you don't have to pay for training. Development comes in all kinds of sizes. Have clarity on where that person wants to go in their career path. So like promotion opportunities, talking to people about job enlargement, those types of things. So there's loads of great things that can come out of performance. I said this in the previous Just Ask Jess, go back to first principles. What are you trying to accomplish? Is this about keeping people on track with their performance? Is it about recognition? Is it about career development? Is it about all of it? Right? Those things will help you figure out how you design the kind of performance mechanism. But those two pieces are generally fundamentally key. If you have underperformance, that's a little bit different. So let's say you're going along and you're having regular one-to-ones with somebody and you're giving them feedback on something they're doing and it's not changing. All right. Mm-hmm. So then depending on how substantial that is, you might end up with wanting to put that person on what's called a performance improvement plan or a PIP. All right. Mm-hmm. Now that is a much more substantial document that says you're missing the mark in these areas. Here is the support that we're going to provide to you to help you get better. We're going to have regular check-ins, but here's the potential implications if you don't close that gap. And so normally it's an indication to someone that they're trending towards an exit situation if they don't get better at what they're doing. So that is quite different. That is like, so we talk about kind of regular performance and development, and then there's a kind of improvement plan side of things. I did have a long conversation with a CEO client of mine who was like, I don't know why we bother with PIPs because people just have them as a precursor to exit. And I was like, but they're not supposed to be. The whole point of a PIP is that you genuinely believe that you can support that person to perform in their role and that with the right things in place, they can get better and get to where they need to. They just need more intentional support and more development than your average employee doing that job would need. I mean, if you don't believe the person is going to ever be able to do the job, putting them on a PIP is unfair to everybody, right? Then we're in a totally different situation.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, there's lots of nuances to how you then do the bits and pieces of performance around, like, do you have competency frameworks? And we can get uber tangly. But for our world of most of our clients who are like less than 250 people, less, in some cases less than 50 people, and in some cases less than 10 people, how are you having regular check-ins with people and giving them the day-to-day kind of course correction feedback? And when are you doing that stop, time out, let's look back at how things have been going, what are the threads and patterns, let's look forward to where you want to get to, what does that mean we need to do in terms of support and development? That's a good place to start.
Mm-hmm. And it said in the question, like, you know, the team is, everybody has different ideas about what that should look like. Do you have any thoughts for this person on, you know, how you get your team together in terms of how to move forward with something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I'd do a team brainstorm session, right? Like, what so chances are they've all lived through some kind of something somewhere, and that's where it's coming from. Like, we had this at my old company and I really liked it because it's the because I care about, right? So there's a piece we talk about in negotiations, positions and interests. Right? So positions are what people come to the table wanting. Interest is why they want it. So what happens in a lot of these conversations is someone goes, well, we should do this, which is a position. What they're not telling you is why they want to do that. We should be doing quarterly reviews. Okay, why do you want a quarterly review? Well, because then I don't go more than 3 months without getting feedback. Okay, so what's most important to you in this process is that you're getting regular feedback and that you're not going past the 3 month mark. That does not necessarily mean a quarterly review. Right. So if you can wind your team back to what are the underlying reasons why they like certain things that they're proposing, put those up as the wish list of these are all the things the team would like our process to tick. What can we design that ticks the most amount of those boxes? Might not tick all of them, but what's the best way that we can shape a system that ticks as much of that as possible for people? And then they're involved in shaping the process. They feel heard. And back to kind of our previous conversations and some of this stuff, participation is really important for reducing threat response. If you leave me out, if I don't have a say, if you talk to everybody else but me, particularly if you talk to everybody else but me, I am going to have a problem with what you put forwards. If I've been involved in shaping, even if you don't pick what I suggested, I have felt included. You've told me I'm important. You've appreciated my opinion. You've shown me how the process works, so it feels fair. I am more likely to be okay with the outcome, even if it's not the outcome that I wanted.
Mm, so great. So great. Oh my goodness. There's like, that is a ton of information to absorb.
Now we regularly design performance management processes for people. So what I say to you is there's lots of things we would normally ask you that I can't cover in like a 15 minute just ask yes slot. Yeah. So, you know, do consider getting somebody in to come and help you, but I recognize budgets don't always apply and everything else. So if you're in that situation, try to focus on those two pieces, get the team in to help you, but be realistic with them. You're not going to make everyone happy. Like that's very, very, I would love to say HR people make everybody happy. We don't, right? What we do is find an equitable way forwards that everybody's had a say in is usually the best way forwards.
Right. Okay, great. That's great. And if, you know, if not, just keep sending in your questions to Just Ask Jess.
I did what you said last time and Just Ask Jess, Jess, and this is what's happened. So now what do I do from here?
This is going to become like a dear, what was that name of that? The advice columnist, the famous advice columnist, I'm blanking on her name now. Yeah. Dear Abby. It's going to become like a Dear Abby, right? Yeah. Okay. So next question. Are you ready? This actually aligns, you know, kind of interestingly with this. So our leadership team is totally divided right now after some big changes. Is this to your performance evaluation policy, perhaps?
We followed your advice and now the team is split in half. Yes. So right, now what do we do?
Exactly. Yeah. Some people are fully on board and others are basically dragging their heels. It's getting super toxic underneath the surface. How do you get everyone realigned when it feels like it's already split? That's a good one. Okay.
So slightly different depending on if it's like two separate camps versus everybody's not going off in their own direction. But there's a great framework we use all the time from the Neural Leadership Institute called the SCARF model, which I've probably mentioned before some point in this podcast series. If not, I definitely did in season one. And that talks about the fact that we are wired for threat and reward, right? So when you're doing anything, your brain is designed to get the maximum amount of benefit for you. So if you're if we have like five buttons in our brains, five kind of hot buttons or trigger points. If they're pressed in a good way, we are motivated, excited, engaged, put a hand up, volunteer, all that good stuff. If they're pushed in a negative way, we will resist, push back, say no, get upset, like avoid or procrastinate, all of those things, right? So we talk about towards behaviors and away behaviors, right? Oh. So what we're describing is we have potentially, I'm not sure if we have one group towards and one group away or two away, going in opposite directions, I'm not sure. But we do not have people going towards, right? We do not have everyone going towards. So the question is, why not? And quite often when people are not bought into whatever it happens to be, it's because the threat is louder than the benefit, right? So when you think about people, we're all about what's in it for me, with them. Right? What's in it? What am I getting out of this? Mm-hmm. If I'm looking at this and going, that's going to be bad, 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 I'm out. I'm not going to do this. So it might be that it's collectively the same concerns. I don't know. Or it might be that you have a group of people who have individual concerns, but they've banded together because they're all concerned. Right. So that happens, flocking, right? Mm. I'm unhappy about it. You're also unhappy about it for different reasons, but we're both unhappy. So we're going to band together and be unhappy together. Like, that's human nature. Right?
Negative bonding. Negative bonding.
Yes, negative bonding. So the first thing is to figure out, to have the really honest conversations about why. Like, why aren't we on board, right? Like, what is causing the concern? And the SCARF model sticks to the five triggers that come up. So status, feeling important, certainty or lack of, ambiguity, lack of clarity, lack of autonomy, so not feeling like you have control or freedom in a situation, relatedness, which is about belonging and feeling safe with people, and then fairness, which is about being kind of treated equitably. And so there might be more than one, it might be all five that are kind of going off for people, but those things will prevent people from being fully bought into what it is you're trying to do. And so that is the first place I would start, but I would do those conversations individually. So talk to each person who you see as being moving away, mm-hmm. and try and understand what is going on for them to cause that, and then identify if there are patterns and themes across the entire team, then bring the entire team together and talk about that pattern or theme. But I don't know, and with this level of detail, whether you have a consistent issue with the solution that's been put forwards, or if you have individual issues and therefore there's enough unhappy people, you have a band of unhappy people, and that's the bit I would pull apart first.
Yeah, and it doesn't really get into those details in the question. Yeah. Just says that it's already super toxic underneath the surface.
Well, and so the other question I'd have is, I don't know, again, what does that mean? Does that mean they're avoiding each other, or they're being mean to each other? Like, I don't know what behavior we're seeing in the workplace. So there's some perhaps clarity we need to provide about, okay, when things aren't going the way we want, how do we handle this as a team? When you are offside with somebody else in the team, what does that mean about how we bring this to the table? When do we put those things on the table? How do we put those things on the table so that people aren't perhaps doing things you don't want them to be doing when they're kind of working around each other?
Mm-hmm. Do you find too, Jess, that, I mean, I just feel like this is human nature, but like, you know, people kind of love to get together, like you're saying, flocking, to like talk about the things that they don't like?
Well, no one gossips about good stuff.
That's
like the rumor mill is always, no one got together and went, did you see Charlene's hair? She looks fabulous today. Like, we might maybe make that comment in passing to one other person. Yeah. The rumor mill does not go through an entire organization about how great someone's hair is. On the flip side, something bad will pass its way through an organization in very short time, right? Because it's threat response. We're wired to deal with threat first. And we need someone to be in it with us. So I don't want to be threatened alone. Right? I don't want to be sad alone. If I can be unhappy with somebody else, then it's not just me and I've got some security then, right? So being with other people kind of presses the buttons in a good way. So it's very, very normal. I mean, the rumor mill, I say this all the time when we do change management work, the rumor mill is your best form of communication. It's just you have no control over it. And the rumor mill will make stuff up, and the rumor mill will, we talk about foinking, like fear of imaginary negative consequences.
Oh.
I don't know who came up with that. It's not mine. I don't know who came up with that word, but I love it. And it will never leave your brain now because people foink, right? That's a word. Never escape you. But that happens, right? People imagine. I mean, I had a situation, can't get into the specifics, but someone was building a new office and something delayed the opening. And within like 2 hours of announcing the delay, a rumor went through the whole office block that there was asbestos in the building. Nothing to do with it. There was no asbestos, wasn't there, didn't exist. But that's like the rumor was there was asbestos in the building, the whole thing was going to shut down and they won't be moving for a year. Like, I don't know where it came from or how it got there, but that was the rumor mill. And it is far more efficient than any corporate communication channel you'll ever have because people are wired for threat first. So wow. In this situation, we need to understand the behaviors that are happening and address them. So it's fine to be unhappy as long as you're constructively unhappy. You don't get to poke at other people. So it's fine to say, I'm not okay with this. It's fine to come and say, I have a challenge. It's fine to come and say, I'm struggling to get on board with this. That's really helpful. Mm-hmm. But you don't do it to each other. You come and say it constructively. And then why are you unhappy and how do we address it? Right. So if you're if you're listening to this and you're thinking, I might be one of those unhappy people, what do you need? And go and ask for what you need. Because just sitting in unhappiness does not help anybody. And we pass unhappiness on. So do yourself a favor and do the people around you a favor and figure out what you need to ask for. And if you don't know what you need to ask for, go and say, I'm unhappy and I don't know what I need to ask for. So I need some help to be I need help to be less unhappy. Mm-hmm. And hopefully your leader will be super emotionally intelligent and good with that.
Wow, that's awesome advice. I think this is going to help. This podcast will help somebody be not unhappy, I think. Okay. Yes.
Who wants to go to work and be unhappy? Like none of us, right? Like, and no. So much. I mean, one of the reasons I started E3 was I saw so many people at work unhappy. Like, you spend more of your time at work than you do with your friends and family. Don't be unhappy. But sometimes we're unhappy about things we really don't need to be unhappy about. Like if you're in the wrong place and it's not the right cultural fit, sure. And sometimes it's not easy to move to a new job and everything else. But like someone said something you didn't like, have you talked to them about it? Have you thought about good intent and gone and asked them about it? Like there's all kinds of things that we get bent out of shape over that realistically, if we had better communication and conversations, we really wouldn't worry about.
So true. So true. Well, I think that's all the time we've got for today. Jess, that's it. Just two questions. Those were both kind of meaty in their own interesting ways, you know?
We'll see what the bag of tricks has been for me next time.
But
yes. On that note, if you're listening in, hopefully that was helpful to you. If you have any comments on today or suggestions, please put them into the email at contact@e3.ca. If you have a scenario or a question you'd like me to answer on a future episode, you can add that in too. And of course, don't forget to follow us on Spotify, iTunes, and check out the past episodes on our website at e3.ca. Next time around, we will be wrapping up the show with our reflection episode and some nuggets of takes that were perhaps not made it into the episode that were still nuggets we want you to see. So hopefully I will see you there.